Martin Parker, Reel 7. Yes, you were saying about Mr. Zhukovsky.
The loudspeakers. Everybody in the house knows, housing from down from the ground floor. That everybody must come down. And if they will not come down and they be found in the house, they will be shot. He went down and he put briefcase, he had gold, all his gold would be accumulated. And he was taken and sent with other people in that church nearby. And the church was put on fire and it started shooting from all directions and everyone in the parish, church perished, including Mr. Zhukovsky. I begged him, don't go. I swear by God Almighty. I begged him many times, evidently. So he had accumulated a lot of gold because having a pass, which I arranged to get him to get from the man of the fact that he worked for, he got a pass to come in and go out at will. And he settled various problems for us. I didn't tell you one trick he did. I told me one trick after the war. To give me an example, what happened? He said, one of my two people living there, working there, told him this. He couldn't go out, but he get the war. Mr. Zhukovsky, go to my villa. I had a villa outside Warsaw. And collect from me, I'll tell you the place, and collect from me gold coins in dollars, $20 coins. So Mr. Zhukovsky was not stupid. He took a Polish policeman into the villa. And there was somebody taking care of the villa, called that man, and he said, I heard that this house are some guns and ammunition hidden somewhere. I have a look at it. If I find anything, it's got to help you. And the policeman took care of that man. And he himself went to the place described by the men in the ghetto, that place, and under the fireplace somewhere. He took out a pack of gold, put in the briefcase, and whether he gave the Jew a penny or not, I don't know. Then he went back to the Polish man who was caring, the caretaker. He said, I haven't found anything here, any gun, guns, ammunition. But I may come again, and if I find anything, it's God help you. The man was shaking in his... And the policeman got also some money from Mr. Zhukovsky for helping him to keep that man under care, under preventing him going elsewhere, you see.
It's ironic, isn't it? You know that he...
Yes, he told me himself.
Yes, but I was thinking that, you know, it's ironic that somebody like him, who made so much of the war, perished. And yet you came through it, didn't you? Your family, you know, this issue...
He was greedy.
Yes. Is that, you think...
He was greedy, very greedy. I gave him away my business and get a penny for it.
Yes. Going back to the other reasons for survival, it's very interesting what you're saying. You know, the fact that if you've got money and if you think very carefully and plan. I was wondering also, you said very early on about before the war, how you felt you didn't want children because you saw what was coming.
I heard Hitler and what he was doing in Germany.
But I was wondering how important it was for you that you had a child to care for.
My father-in-law said, no children. 3 years after the wedding, no children. So I decided we will have a child. Not my wife. My wife had nothing to say about it. I said, I will have a child. And my wife couldn't bear children. Nobody knew about it. She had in herself a growth.
Yes, you have explained that earlier.
But
yes, you did explain this earlier. But you know, the point I think I'm making is, did it make a difference, do you think, to your determination to survive because you had a child?
I wanted to survive. in a new day, having a baby will be much more difficult to get out. I have to think in advance. And I knew what Hitler can do to us.
But once you had the child and the war started, was Helena then an important factor, do you
think? Very important. Before the war, I remember in 1939, I went to the Warsaw Zoo. Not compared to London Zoo. It was 100 of it, the London Zoo. I took my child there when she was 3 years old. It was a long way, went by bus, but some. And then I took her back there for the carrier, she was too tired. Until took another bus and went back home. It was not the most other side of Warsaw, on the left side, where I would be hidden.
Yes. So would you say Helena was an important reason for surviving?
Once she was born, it was very important. I was determined to survive, that she would survive. Oh, and I wouldn't give up her way for life or anything. When I came home, and she was 2 years old, and I came for lunch, she immediately wanted to sit on my knee. I had sometimes not possible to eat because she was sitting on my knee and moving left and right and center. But nevertheless, it was all acceptable to me. It was a lovely child. When she was 3 years old, my daughter brought her to the professor who was helped her to survive. Because as a child born in 7 months, she needed special care.
Yes, you have explained that, Mr. Parker. You told me about that earlier on. But it's really this, you know, keeping to the theme of what is important for survival. How important is luck? Good luck or bad luck, you know?
Very important. A quarter of an ounce of luck is all important. If I didn't have any luck, I may be having a lot of money, but no luck, nothing would have happened. God, luck goes with us. If luck doesn't come along, you have to help yourself, and God will help you. If you don't do anything, you wait for God's help, nothing will happen. You have to do something, and God will help you. And God helped us.
What sort of toll did it take on you, though, as an individual? You know, all these years, from 1939 to 1945, living, you know, in hiding and under threat. Did you find psychologically, or, you know...
Can you get used to anything? You can get used to anything. There's no option. Where will I go? Nobody except people from Poland. I could go to South America, to Argentina. They would accept us. But Argentina was a primitive country, or Brazil, very primitive country. We didn't have any luxuries in the houses in Warsaw, but compared to our houses, they were really they wouldn't get used to it. And besides, they had the money to go so far abroad. I could have taken the money from my father-in-law, but it was not mine. Mm-hmm. It belongs to my mother-in-law, her sons, and my wife.
But I wonder what effect this had on you, you know, living under such strain from 1939 to 1945. I mean, did you have bad dreams?
Later, I had the bad dreams. I came to London. When I came to London, after all these things, then the dreams came on to me. Not before this. It was determined to get out of Moorland.
How about your wife? How about her psychological state after this had ended? You know,
I didn't discuss it, but I do know one thing. The moment she came to London, she became ill. To England, to London, Liverpool, actually, she became ill. And two weeks later, after arrival in Liverpool, he was seen by Professor Lord Cohen, Liverpool. He was the chief, he was the president of the medical association, Lord Cohen. And my brother knew him very well. So it didn't cost us anything to go to this visit. He came, he saw us, my wife. He said, look, she had terrible high blood pressure. One doctor in the hospital. First of all, had a doctor, a normal doctor. But then it was that time when the medicine for all, the hospital for all were introduced by the Labour Party. And we had the misfortune to come across a doctor who liked to play cards more than treating his patients. And he did nothing. He didn't check him. I said, one day I came to him and said, if you will not do anything about my wife, to take her to hospital or what, I will do something you will regret. I didn't know myself what you were going to do, but I said, you regret it. This gave me the impulse to call a doctor from a hospital. I don't know his name. The doctor came and ran up to the hospital and asked for an ambulance and took it to our hospital in Liverpool. It was near a cemetery. I don't know. My wife always said, if I die, I have near far to go across to the cemetery. And he didn't know how to handle it, the high blood pressure. He suggested to my wife, they have an operation on her back. One operation and another operation a few months later. And Professor Cohen, he said, no operation. New drugs are being invented. I know about it. Against high blood pressure. He was right.
Was this related to her experience in the war?
Yes.
Did they think?
Yes. And imagine this, when she later applied to the Germans for payment because they started paying indemnity to various people. A German Jewish doctor here in London declared that the blood pressure does not come from a high tension or anything like that. They want to give a penny. So unfortunately, that doctor was taken away, or moved away or something, and another doctor came. And the other doctor believed my wife and what she was saying, and she got 30% or 25% of what she was due. Because at that time, the Germans didn't come to a conclusion that high blood pressure can come from this situation through and through.
What other compensation did you get from Germany? For what?
She got about £180 a month. Should have got it normal pension, good pensions. My sister-in-law, she had complained about something else, but her knees, arthritis, she got the same money.
How about your property? How about you yourself?
I was foolish. I asked only for $400 compensation for the furniture. Could have got £800 on, but that's not. Mm. I gave my wife, first of all, back pay. And then she got this pension. The back pay about £2,500. And a pension about £200 a month. But she should have got the money a long time ago. They gave her back pay.
Now, when I spoke to Helena,
I also complained about something because I was kicked by Germany and the soft spot behind was a German Volksdeutsch complained about me that this and this and this, nothing. And the German officer, SS, gave me a kick on the hind into the bone at the end of the spine. And it was for months, after years, I was suffering from this. I didn't get anything.
Do you think your family is unusual, the fact that so many of you survived compared with other families?
I don't think that 6 people ever survived. 1-2 people could survive, not 6 people. I think this is a winning case. I went to a club. It still exists. This is not far from. And a club is near Golders Green. And I told my story. He told me, you must have been a kapo. A kapo was somebody who was giving away Jews to the Germans. I said, I was never in a concentration camp, I said to him. I was hidden all the time. He said, I was a kapo. He didn't understand the case, a stupid man. I said, I never was a concentration camp. I was hidden. I didn't want to talk to anyone, never come again to the place.
He was really accusing you of being a collaborator.
Collaborator with the Germans. Of course, I survived the war. Only those who collaborated with the Germans, he said, survived the war. What can I do? I'm on bended knees asking to listen to me again, all over again? No, I don't want to know him anymore. I didn't talk to him anymore.
Yes, you've already explained your view of collaborators.
I started my story with the fact that I never was in a concentration camp. And told him I was hiding in private house and so on. Then he said he must have been a couple. So idiot. He was an idiot.
You have there spoken about collaborators, haven't you?
Yes.
Such as the Jewish police and how your view of those.
Jewish police had a nasty end.
Yes, you did explain that, Mr. Parker. You told me that they were all taken in the end and perished, yes.
With their wives and children, in the wagon sent away. Even my cousin, who helped me to get out, perished. His wife managed to get out of the wagon somehow, and she survived, and she lived with a Pole. On this condition, he agreed to have her.
Can I ask you now about, arriving in Liverpool? This must have been a very strange experience for you.
Of course, when I came out and I saw the Lime Street station, my wife said, is this the centre of the town? And just my brother said, yes. The walls were dark from the suit, from the trains. Opposite, Lime Street. Oh, and we were living not very far from the station after going through Mount Pleasant Street in Liverpool to a square, not where the university had his houses there. But in Mount the houses where he got a flat on the second floor, I believe. And we got prepared for us 3 rooms. One bedroom for my brother-in-law, who went to Liverpool earlier, and one bedroom for us. And when they came to Liverpool, they took, of course, the best room for themselves. Okay. And there was one room for visitors, so to say.
How about the language situation when you arrived?
I could speak English, but holdingly, you see.
Because there's a different accent in Liverpool, isn't there?
I didn't speak English. I could read, but never spoke English. I never to speak with. It so happens I prepared once, as a request by brother-in-law, Professor Rodnard, a speech. About the story, what happened, how Warsaw, not about Jewish stories, cases, but the Polish, everything, what happened in Warsaw. And he read it and said, it's very good. Don't need any correction. He knew already English. But when I came to talk, they asked me to answer questions. I told them, gentlemen, my supply of words, speak, is not good. I cannot think, find the words, and correct it somehow if I can. But to speak, I'm not fluent in it. But within 2 weeks, 4 weeks, I spoke English fluently. Because I knew already English, but didn't have to use it. If you have known something, but you don't use it, you don't know anything. You can forget anything. Then I came later to Liverpool. Then I saw Norbert. The one that I used, Junior Clark. In my mind, I didn't know Junior Clark is a young man. Thomas Bell and Company, that was the name. And they were exporters. And I went there. And came there, said to the boy who opened me the door, I think it's too late that I came here. Wait a second, he said, I'll go upstairs to the boss, let him see. And the boss said he wants to see me. I went upstairs, and the boss started talking to me, sitting up behind a big chair table, big boss. And I started talking to him, he said, when did you come to England? I said, a few weeks ago. And he speaks English like that? Because another director, a younger director, said, look at this man. Then he said, I may engage you, but I have to go for a holiday. And you need to give me some references about yourself. I had some friends in Liverpool who lived in my professor room, I gave references. He was then a Jew, not a professor, he was then a lecturer at the university. Of course, the references were very good. He engaged me for a trial of 1 month. And I stayed 7 years.
When you came to England, though, was there any sort of refugee organisation to help you?
There was one in Manchester, not in Liverpool.
Did you go to them for help?
Yes. And they asked me the money.
What did they give you?
About a few weeks. That was all. That helped me to gain my language, open my mouth.
Was that a Jewish organisation?
For refugees. They said, stay with us for a few weeks.
Was that, it seems that it was helpful.
I had to go every morning. Take a train from Liverpool to Manchester. And I had usually, the train was such that I had to be in time. In Liverpool, the train came usually well before they opened the office at 9 o'clock. So I usually was standing near the door and waiting for them. But about a short time there.
Was that useful, you know, to have that organisation?
Yes. It was open mouth. I started thinking English, started talking. But I had a big collection of words to talk about.
Yes, I was thinking of the sort of refugee organisation, and I was wondering about the Jewish community in Liverpool. Did they help you at all?
No, I didn't go to them even. No, I'm not a beggar, I'm not going. I got to know them later, I said, because it was a Zionist society. And I remember we were all very happy and shedding tears. In 1948, when Israel declared itself as a free country.
Did that mean a lot to you?
A lot. Because the country didn't exist for 4 years, for 2,000 years, after Jesus Christ. And then the Romans came and destroyed everything. And they were dispersed all over the world. And we somehow found ourselves in Europe. We were in Germany. There was a time everybody was against the Jews. In 1242, 1245, my forefathers probably been in Germany. And they were chased out and they came to Poland. Poland invited us because Poland was then a fourth great country. And they created became a country, a European country. But when they have done our job, out.
So Israel was important to you when that was founded. Did you think of going to Israel?
Yes. My brother went there in 1949, one year after the establishing Israel as a country. He said to my sister-in-law, he could only take out £10, that was the maximum she would take from him. He came back after 6 months with £10 in the pocket. Because my brother-in-law, my sister, and my brother-in-law, her husband, had a shop which opened with my father's money, didn't have any money. He gave them £500. He went to Israel in 1932. He came back in 1934 and took my sister and his wife number three. He divorced them. My wife died. My mother died, then he married a woman, then he divorced and they took this woman. This was number three. And took her to Israel.
But you didn't think of going there to live?
Yes, my wife thought about it. And she came back after 6 months with the same £10 in the pocket and told me it's not good for us because there's nothing exists yet. A lot of sun, but no houses. Very primitive. Very few houses there.
How easy do you think you adapted? Because I know you later went to London, didn't you? How did you adapt to English life, do you think?
I worked in Liverpool 7 years. My starting pension, when I came to England to get this job, I earned £5. Everybody earned £5. It wasn't enough to make a living. I had to pay rent £1. It was cheap. But I had only £5 for food to pay for my daughter's buses. She went to high school for girls in Liverpool. There was a lot of money for it, for this advance. And we couldn't make ends meet. My mother went to work, needlework in a factory, making dresses for ladies' dresses. And there was one girl particularly who was sewing with a needle without thread. That's cheating, the boss. And then he said, the only person who gives me some work is the Polish girl. But that's what they were hated there. She was hated in the office, in the work there. But she worked properly, gave out a lot of work. She did not know this way before, but she was shown what to do, she did. And several girls there said to my wife, go back to Poland where you came from. Take away our jobs, eat our bread. And he was earning £3 a week for this, only £3. But it helped us because the rent was £1. So my £5 plus the two she earned was enough for this. Did go once every few weeks to the cinema or something. Once every few weeks. In cinema was cheap then. 75 pence will go to a cinema in Liverpool. It was that the preservation was then £1 was all the money. And when my wife came back from Israel, the boss gave me, Mr. Robinson, an increase of £3, £8. Then my wife stopped going to work. She worked about 3 years. But But at the time was trying to get to London. I went several times to London. A bus. All night journey. Interviews. And I saw adverts in the papers. I went to London and tried to get a job. I was too old, I was a baby. I was 39 years old when I came to London, to England, to Liverpool. And I was right there 7 years, I was 46 then. At that time, at such an age, you couldn't get a job. Eventually, the last payment I got, the salary I got from my boss was £13. And I introduced various. One day he asked me to take over market. Brazil first. I went for 2 years to night classes to learn Brazil Portuguese. Just to be able to read a letter and to know what it is about, because in the office they had a man who translated the letters into Portuguese.